Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Richard Rossi Live in Blog Talk Radio. We have a lovely, lovely lady, so beautiful, just caught all of our attention watching one of the iconic cult classic monster movies, King Kong Escapes. She was the beautiful blonde in that film. She was in the hands of King Kong. How frightening is that? Can you imagine being in the hands of King Kong? I'm going to take you back to, I think it was 1968, when Linda Jo Miller was in the hands of King Kong.
Gives himself against the nation's armament and plunges a beautiful girl into a world of terror.
And that beautiful girl plunged into a world of terror was Linda Jo Miller, who will be back with us shortly. Oh, you got chills yet? We'll be back in about 30 seconds with Linda Jo Miller from King Kong Escapes. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be right back. Welcome, Linda. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing great. And you're kind of like Greta Garbo. You know, you were in the movies and then kind of disappeared because some of us were wondering what happened to you. And I was reading an article that somebody found you, and there was a newspaper article about that. So I was wondering, that gives me the feeling that after this, you know, this great monster movie, King Kong Escapes, that, I mean, it gives the impression, was it kind of like a lull where you were just living normal life and not thinking about that and people didn't know, and then you were kind of rediscovered by fans of the film? Or was there a steady interest of fans, or did it feel like you were under the radar and then got rediscovered by the fans?
No, I never even knew I was on the radar. I did the film in 67 when I was living in Japan, and then my parents and I came back in February of 68, and I hung around. Well, I stayed in L.A. for a long time, but I stayed in the acting scene for a couple years and then decided it really wasn't something I wanted to pursue here in the States. And then that's it. I never really thought much about it until out of the blue I got a phone call from Brett Homnick, and he said that they'd been looking for me, and just really, really shocked me and surprised me.
Well, when we watched it on Svengoolie Saturday night, I was like, whatever happened to, you know, you have such a striking beauty that, you know, we don't forget you. You're the big doe eyes and the blonde hair, and you're in King Kong's grip, and there was some confusion. I think I read some people, because of your name, confused you with Jackie Gleason had a daughter who was Linda Miller. Did you know about that? Or
I didn't know about that until Brett mentioned it to me. But when I got my union card, my SAG card, in, I guess it was 69, when I went to get the card, I couldn't use my name because there was already a Linda Miller. And it just didn't dawn on me to go with Linda Jo Miller. So my agent at the time changed my name to Leslie Michaels, which I always hated. And so I got my SAG card under Leslie Michaels. So, yeah,
wow.
I've heard that they've confused me with Jackie Gleason's daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, one of my close friends that's been my wife in several things I've acted in, her dad and Jackie Gleason were real dear friends. So that's just kind of an interesting
thing
of trivia. Yeah. Now, before Japan, this is one of those great Japanese monster movies. This is the same company that made Godzilla?
Yes, Toho Studios. Yeah.
And you were there because your dad was military, is that right?
Yes, my dad was in the Air Force. He was a lifer. And we were, he was a meteorologist, and they had sent him to the University of Oklahoma to get his master's degree. And I had been interested in Spanish language, so I was taking classes when I was in Oklahoma. And my Spanish teacher, I would go home with her every Friday night, and she and her husband and I would have dinner and speak nothing but Spanish. So my dream was to be an interpreter, a Spanish interpreter at the UN. So when we knew that it was time for Dad to be stationed overseas, so he put in for Spain. And I got all excited. I thought I was going to Spain. And then they said, no, you're going to Japan. So that's how we wound up in Japan.
Those of you listening, this is, well, I think the character was Susan Watson, right?
Yes, yes, Lieutenant Watson.
Linda Jo Miller played Susan Watson in King Kong Escapes. And by the way, I didn't even ask you this when we were chatting before the show, but is there any website or any way that you want to give fans to keep in touch with you? I didn't even ask that. I'm sorry to put you on the spot now, but... That's okay.
Yes, I'm on Facebook. I have a fan page. It's Linda Miller, King Kong Escapes.
Okay.
And, yeah, if the fans would like to go there, I'm learning how to post things. So, you know, I'll keep things updated there. My agent is working on a convention sometime this year.
Well, I just liked it. I'm your 412th like.
Yay.
Oh,
well, you
I
know
love
what?
The pictures, too. I love a black and white shot of you with a smile. Wow.
Oh, thank you. Now, that actually was taken, I think, a week after we wrapped on King Kong Escapes.
Is that right?
A friend
yeah, it looked
of mine.
Like the same time.
Yeah.
Well, you have that face that just, you know, makes hearts flutter. And I can see why you started off as a model, didn't you? You got over to Japan and you started modeling, basically. And you did a lot of print stuff. We have on the website for this broadcast some of the photos from the print stuff. How did you start the modeling? Well, you kind of discovered the old thing of someone seeing you and you ought to be a model, honey, that sort of thing?
No, but the funny thing is when we were, my dad was already in Japan. He left like in February and I wanted to stay behind and graduate from high school. So my mom and I stayed behind and we, on the way to San Francisco to catch the plane, we drove and we wound up in Las Vegas and we went to a show, Eddie Fisher, of all people.
Oh, really? The singer?
Yeah, we got there, and they grabbed me and my mom, and they set me down in the front row. And then when he came out, when he went into the audience, he sang to me.
Oh, wow.
And I'll tell you, it was the weirdest thing. Those lights just kind of hit me, you know, and I thought, wow, that's kind of cool.
He always would pick out the prettiest girl in the room, so that's a compliment. I mean, you know, this is a man that picked Debbie Reynolds and Elizabeth Taylor, so that's quite a compliment.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. But then when we got to Japan, my dad, in fact, the day we arrived, my dad said to me, when we lived in France, I lived right next door to this girl, and I can't remember her name. And he said, so-and-so is having a graduation party tonight, the girl that we used to live next door to. So I missed my graduation party because we had to leave. And so I went to her party, and there was a girl there. I'm pretty short. I'm like just over 5 feet tall. And there was a girl there that was shorter than I was, or shorter than I am. And she was talking about how she went to this modeling class, and now she's modeling and she's making money. And I just looked at her and I thought, oh, my God, if she can do it, I can do it. So I got the information from her, it was called Patricia Charm School in Tokyo, in Harajuku. I went there, and I never finished the classes because I just started working almost immediately.
And you were about 17?
I was 17 when I started.
It's interesting, too, because here you are in Japan, and you just stand out. I mean, the blonde hair and the that, you know, just adorable face, and you're in a completely new culture, and you have no experience acting, right? You basically are offered the lead in a film. Now,
I know.
We're here in Hollywood, and I direct films, and I can tell you that what happened to you, I know thousands of actresses here that's their ultimate dream would be get discovered, get a lead in a film with no experience. But that, you literally hit the lottery. I mean, that happens one in 20 million times.
I was at the right place at the right time with the right look. It had nothing that, I mean, it was as uncomplicated as that. And I did not have blonde hair when I was modeling. My natural color
was more brunette.
Yeah, I'm a light brown. And in the summertime, it would get, you know, blonde streaks, but basically it was a light brown. And so when Arthur called me and I met with him, he said, "You got to dye your hair blonde." And I was like, "I don't want to dye my hair blonde, you know."
Wow.
But that was what he wanted me to do, and that's.
Well, you look fantastic. Now, this is is it Arthur Rankin?
Yes, Arthur Rankin.
Yeah. Now these are the guys that my wife's a puppeteer in the Puppetry Guild here in Los Angeles, and we love these guys for what they did with all those claymation, you know, the Rudolph special and the Santa Claus. I mean, these guys were interesting with the stop motion stuff, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. But I had no idea who he was because I'm living in Japan, and all this stuff on TV that he did is being shown in the States, and I never watched TV because I was working all the time anyway.
Yeah, and there's
so I had no idea who he was.
Yeah,
I'm
it wasn't
sorry?
Really around that long. I think Rudolph might have been like 64 or something like that, so it wasn't that long. Now, before you went to Japan, I guess since you just started modeling in Japan, you didn't really have experience modeling or anything in the States. What was your life like in the States? Were you just a normal teenage girl going to school?
I was a normal teenage girl, cheerleader, you know. I had a high school boyfriend, you know, just the typical teenager. And and we moved so much. I spent my last 2 years of school in Moore, Oklahoma, which is right outside of Oklahoma City. And in fact, because I wanted to be an interpreter and because I knew my dad was going to be stationed overseas, I went to summer school so I could skip my 11th grade because I had enough credits. So I went from the 10th grade to the 12th grade.
Wow,
and I graduated a year early. So just
beauty and brains.
Well, thanks.
Wow. Yeah. So this film, I know, of course, the special effects and everything, but was, I mean, it's scary to us as kids watching this. Was it scary, or because you knew that it's almost like a magician knows the tricks and the contraptions of how the tricks are done, was it scary at all or not really? I mean, to be in this giant hand and the whole King Kong, I know some of it was miniatures. Was it scary at all, or did you have to just pretend you were scared?
I had to pretend I was scared because you guys on the screen saw this big King Kong. Well, I never saw King Kong. All I saw was Nakajima-san in a suit, you know, and he was about my height, you know. But when I was in the actual hand, it was like a mechanical hand that they rigged, and they lifted it off of the floor. And I'm not a big fan of heights, so I held on really tight. So in that respect, I was scared, but I wasn't scared.
Oh, yeah. So that was some fear because of your fear of heights, yeah.
Yeah, my fear of heights, which I'm trying to overcome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did this, then you came to L.A. Did you have to kind of, did it feel like, I don't know, coming to L.A., this is a Japanese film, did you feel like you had to start at the bottom, or did having a lead in a film already get you ahead of the casting calls when you came to Los Angeles to get into acting?
It really had no effect at all. See, when I was in Japan, I was a big fish in a small pond. Then I come to L.A. Oh, and when I was in Japan, I stood out because I was different. I was not so different that they couldn't relate to me, but I was different enough that I looked unique. I come to L.A., and I'm a regular American girl, and there was nothing more unique about me than the girl sitting in the next seat next to me, you know. So it pretty much was like you had to start from scratch. And
interesting. Did people recognize you in the States at that point after the film?
No, I never had anybody come up and recognize me.
Interesting. It seems like these kind of films sometimes they grow with the devotion through time. Does it feel like that?
Exactly. That's exactly the way it feels because, I mean, I had no idea there was a fan base for this movie. And when I first found out about it, I was just bewildered, you know. And it seems to me like it has grown over time, you know.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and back then we didn't have, VHS and DVD and Netflix and everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you saw something, it was in the theater and you went and saw it.
Yeah.
And then sometime later it's on TV, and if you don't see it when it's broadcast, you miss it.
Yep.
And so things were more of an event when you saw it on TV. You might talk to our friends. Did you see King Kong Escapes on Chiller Theater Saturday night? But it wasn't quite as accessible. That might have been another reason it took time was, you know, it hits the theaters probably on a double bill with another monster movie, and then it wasn't like people could just go, you know, see it whenever they choose like today. So it took a while, I guess, for some of these fans to start wondering, whatever happened to Linda Miller?
Yeah. I was just, like I say, when Brett called me, I was flabbergasted. He said, I've been looking for you. And I said, for what?
That is so cool. Well, I tell you, when we saw it, we were like, oh, we have to find out what happened to her. You're so adorable. And you stayed in touch with some of the cast and had a connection to some of your people involved in the film. That's pretty cool to see that kind of longevity, almost like, you know, you went to college or something, or you were like guys in the service together. You through the years had this connection, didn't you?
Rhodes Reason became a family friend. He played Lieutenant Captain Nelson, and he became a family friend. And when he left, when the film wrapped and he went back to the States, he said, when you get to L.A., give me a call and I'll hook you up with, you know, some people. So we got back to L.A. and he got me into an acting school and, you know, opened some doors for me and gave me some advice. And he kind of became like my Hollywood father sense that, it was really cool because, you know, certain people would ask me out on a date and I'd call him. I'd say, what about this guy? And he said, nope, don't go out with him. He was like a big brother kind of,
that's,
you know.
Nice to have someone like that. He was a really handsome guy.
He was very handsome. He had an awesome voice. Oh,
he had that stereotypical, I think in that time, that leading man kind of look to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you'd say it, a Robert Taylor or something, but he had that stature, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And when he walked in the room, you knew he had walked into the room, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why I was very afraid when the first day of shooting, I was a wreck. Because here you had Takarada-san, which I knew was a big star in Japan. Then they bring over this other American movie star. And when you saw Rhodes, I mean, his presence was really strong. So, and I thought, what am I doing here?
And you've never been in a film. That's really something.
The only thing I had ever done on film was I did a Canon commercial where I didn't say a word, you know. That's the only film experience I had. So I didn't, well, that's not true. When I first got to Japan, very soon afterwards, I did a weekly TV show called English for Millions. And it was shot in a studio, but it was more of an educational thing. So anyway, to back up. So, you know, first day of shooting, I mean, it's really obvious. I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't know how to do anything that they tell me. And so he just stepped right up and started helping me.
You're talking about Rhodes Reason?
I'm talking about Rhodes, yeah.
Yeah,
said,
that's so great to have an ally showing you the ropes in a situation like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Very kind man. So he was gracious and didn't make you feel put down, because I've known other actresses in a situation where they, you know, haven't been in a big feature and they're around all these A-list stars. And I won't mention names, I could, but in some cases, the A-list stars are very nasty, that they don't know what they're doing, or you didn't hit your mark, or, you know, you're an amateur.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it reduced the person to tears, you know?
Yeah. He was completely the opposite.
That's wonderful. He did everything
he could to help me, so that, because I felt very uncomfortable. It took me, I can't remember how long, but I know it took me probably a couple of weeks before I felt halfway, I don't want to say confident, but at least I wasn't, you know, my stomach wasn't in knots, you know. But he was
wonderful.
Very, very helpful. And so
well,
was
you
Takarada-san.
Were great. Now. Oh, what was that?
I said, so was Takarada-san. He was very helpful.
Yeah. Now, Takarada, was he the commander?
Yes. No, he was, what was his name? Jiro. He was Lieutenant Jiro, yeah. He was... there was the three of us. He was the Japanese male lead.
One of the jokes I know we made as kids, because we love these films, was the whole dubbing issue where we'd move our lips and say, oh, Godzilla, and then move our lips a few seconds later.
Yeah.
You know, I guess with this first in the Japanese language and then got dubbed with American voices, because when they show it here on TV, there's these, you know, almost Shakespearean American voices coming out of the Japanese actors.
Yeah, that was a big disappointment for me, because I didn't understand. You know, when I was told it would be dubbed in English, I just assumed I'd be the one dubbing my own voice, and it was a big shock to me when they went back to the States and they had somebody else dub my voice, because you know, I figured it was bad. You know, even if I was the worst actress in the world, I honestly felt that my voice would have been better than the voice that they picked.
Mm. Well, yeah, you got a great voice.
Oh, thank you. But I just, that was the only disappointment I had. And if I had the nerve, I would have called Arthur when I got back to the States and say, what did you do to me? You know, but... I didn't have a Screen Actors Guild contract at the time because I was living in Japan. I didn't even know there was such a thing. And I was actually contracted.
So you didn't even have any way to protect yourself on that point, huh?
No, because I had a Toho contract. I didn't have a contract with Arthur.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And you started in Pennsylvania, if I read correctly. That's my home state as well. What age were you in Pennsylvania?
I was actually born in Pennsylvania, outside of Erie, about an hour outside of Erie.
I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh, you know where Franklin is?
Oh, yes, I do.
That's where I was born, was in Franklin.
You're kidding. Well, one of my scripts I've written is about a woman I was fascinated with as a little boy and used to hang around with, a faith healer named Catherine Coleman, and she...
Oh, yeah.
Her ministry started in Franklin, Pennsylvania, and then she got
real
famous.
Did it really?
She had her base in Pittsburgh. Yeah, she was... Oh, this is a rabbit trail, but she was a famous preacher in her 20s in Denver, thousands of people, and then the thing fell apart because she got involved with a married man, and so she was kind of an exile where no one would forgive her for maybe 10, 15 years, and then a little church in Franklin said, you know what, God forgives, we'll give you another chance.
That's
and she started
right.
preaching, and people said God healed them, but it all started in Franklin.
That is so amazing. Well, my dad, both my parents were born in Pennsylvania. My mom is from Cambridge Springs, which is right outside of Erie, and my dad also, I think, was from Cambridge. And then I have family that lives in Seneca and Cranberry and
My wife and two kids and I lived in Cranberry when they were little. We lived in Cranberry from, like, we bought a house there in 1989.
Wow.
And moved out of that house to California in 1996. Mm-hmm. So we were in Cranberry 89 to 96.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I left there. Dad rejoined the Air Force when I was about 4 or 5, and then that began my nomadic life. I lived everywhere.
So that was tough because you had to kind of, I guess it made you adaptable to meet new friends and then have to leave friends and meet new friends again,
and you know, starting out at that age, I learned what I needed to do, and I mean, I don't have problem meeting people or feeling comfortable talking with people just naturally, thank God, because with the way I was brought up, you had to do that. Like, when you went to school, you were always the new kid, so you had to learn how to adapt and make friends, and so that's what I learned. In fact, this is interesting. When we went to Japan, I was so upset about going to Japan because I had my heart set on Spain. We landed in Techikawa Air Force Base, I think, and they took us from there by bus to somewhere else, I can't remember. And as we're driving, it was in the middle of the day, and as we're driving on the bus and I look out, all of a sudden I felt like I had come home. It was the weirdest feeling. I felt very at home from the minute I set foot in Japan.
Wow, that is so interesting. You had this almost cross-cultural ability to adapt like that.
Mm-hmm. And I love other cultures, and, you know, I like that.
You'd be
and
a
I
good
lived in France when I was a little girl.
I think.
I don't know about that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because you had an experience where, a faith experience, speaking of that, how did God become more real in your life? How did that journey happen?
It's a long, long journey, a very slow study. My first experience that I ever remember is when my parents took me, so we were living in Texas, so I was in fourth grade, was that about 10 years old or so, and we went to see the Ten Commandments in the drive-in theater. And I came home from that, and I decided I wanted to be a nun because I thought that's what being spiritual was being a nun. And I remember reading the Bible and not understanding much at all. And so that was the very first time I can remember have any kind of a search for God, you know.
And what was the film at the drive-in again?
The Ten Commandments.
Oh, the
Charlton
Heston one.
Yes. It was so powerful. Especially for a little girl.
It's such an epic film.
Oh, yeah. You know, it just really did something to me. So I kind of, and then that passed. And then when I went to Japan and came back, I had a really hard time, I don't want to say adjusting, but I left my heart in Japan. So when I came back to the States, I really wasn't very happy. My parents got divorced. I was engaged to somebody, and we broke up. So it's like everything happened at once. And somebody introduced me to Buddhism at the time. So I became a Buddhist for a long, long time, maybe 10, 12 years. And then this is a long journey, so if it's too long, just let me know. Then one day I just, because in Buddhism, they basically say that, you know, your perfect self lives inside of you, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, if my perfect self lives inside me, I'm in real trouble because I am not so perfect.
I am in real trouble.
So anyway, some things happened in my life. I went through a divorce, and I just found myself praying, and one day I just said, you know, and during that period, people were coming up witnessing to me, and I didn't want to hear it. And I don't know why, but it's like I had a target on my back. Everybody would come up and say, do you know the Lord? Do you know the Lord? Do you know Jesus? And they'd witness to me, and I would reject it. And one day I got so upset, I went outside, and I said, God, if you're really real, you better let me know where I can understand it, because I am sick of your people harassing me. And that night, I had an experience, and for some reason I had a Bible in my house, and I don't know how it got there, but I opened up the Bible to John, and, you know, like in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and, you know, that. And it just... I just felt this fire go through me. And right then and there, I said, okay, I believe. But then I still didn't serve the Lord. And it was in 2005, one day, I just you know, I guess because I had gotten older and started thinking more about what's going to happen to me when I die, and, you know, and those questions you have. And I thought, you know, I just need to get serious. So I just got myself in a church and started studying and just opened myself up to whatever God had for me. And I decided right then and there that if I was going to be a Christian, I wasn't going to pussyfoot around. I was going to be a Christian. I was going to learn about God. I was going to live my life for God, and because I wanted to have the experiences that they had in the Bible. I didn't want to waste time. And so that's my testimony. You know?
Well, it's so interesting. We have such parallel lives because the Gospel of John is what really brought me in. I loved the Gospel of John and still do. It's my favorite book in the Bible, and has 21 chapters, and I started reading 3 a day. And so getting through it in a week and just rereading. In fact, this day I have, you know, large portions of it memorized, and it's my favorite. I just love it. And it speaks to me on a lot of levels, the scripture you quoted. Even as a writer, I've written scripts and films and a novel and things. In the beginning was the Word, because here in Hollywood, if you can write, you have the world at your feet, because all the guys in the suits and ties that act like they have the power, they still need the guy that can put the Word down really make it work. So I just love the way it starts. In the beginning was the Word, the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I appreciate you sharing your faith. That is so cool.
And I really believe, you know, all the stuff that's happened to me in the last couple of years is phenomenal. You know, I mean, I was just living my life in you know, obscurity, and nobody knew anything. And all of a sudden, it's like a spotlight was put down, and all the things that, I don't want to say the desires of my heart, because I didn't even have the desires, but I just felt that God just opened up doors that had been closed that I didn't even know I wanted them to open again. And so I am extremely appreciative and grateful to all the fans and, you know, especially to God, because he made all this happen. And
well, the PR person or the writer in me has already got a title for your memoirs, or at least a log line to promote it, from being in King Kong's hands to being in God's hands, because it says in the Gospel of John that, you know, you're in my hand and no one can take you out of my hand.
Well, one of the scriptures that I had learned that kind of hit home, I don't remember where it's at, but it says that God goes before us and makes our crooked paths straight. And that's kind of how I looked at my life. You know, I felt very much for many years that I had more potential than I had realized, and didn't know how to realize it, didn't know how to take whatever talents I was given or abilities or blessings. I didn't know what to do with it or how to make it grow, or and so I feel that, you know, God has gone before me and straightened out a lot of things and given back to me things that, I don't want to say were stolen, but were no longer there. And I just really appreciate it. I mean, I am so thrilled. I can't tell you.
That scripture about the crooked paths, I will go before thee and make the crooked path straight. What does that metaphor mean to you? If you look at your life, what would you consider the crooked paths in your life?
What I consider the crooked paths, number one, is trying to live my life myself and make things happen by myself and make decisions by myself with no guidance, no spiritual guidance, no, you know, I mean, God's all-knowing and he's all-wise, and never reaching out and saying, hey, this is what I'd like to do. What do you think? Can you help me? Is this a good idea? Never having a compass, you know. And so I made mistakes. I've been married twice and divorced twice. And, you know, I've just made some mistakes. And I just feel that God's taken everything that I've done, good and bad and in between, and just, you know, said, okay, this is the path that I have for you. You know, it's like he says in Jeremiah that he's got a plan for all of us, and it's a plan to give us hope and give us a future. And I feel like I'm living in that hope in the future now, you know. And so I just feel like he's taken a lot of things that that if I had stayed on the path I was on would not have gotten me here. And that's
Well, now, since your rediscovery by the fans, you know, or meet fans at conventions and things like that. What has that been like to meet fans at conventions?
I think I'm more excited than they are. You know, it's
wonderful.
Like, I can't believe you even want to see me or you even know my name. This is so thrilling, you know.
Isn't that cool?
I love it. I absolutely love it. And
now, I will say this. This might be something you're too nice to answer, but I have a lot of celebrity friends that, you know, come on the show and stuff that do the conventions. And once, you know, they all tell me there's always that... those weird ones that they get that they just are like, oh, wow. You know, there was Linda Blair was at one for The Exorcist or something.
She got some weird ones.
And, you know, God bless her. I mean, Linda, you know, is a wonderful person, and she does all these things to help rescue animals and things. But, you know, this poor woman, in a sense, you know, people that weren't sophisticated enough to know she was playing a part, and for years walking down the street, oh, she's possessed by the devil, she's evil. And people, you know, at conventions would, you know, one guy came up to her at a convention, will you sign my Ouija board to give it more power? You know, she's like, no, I'm not signing your Ouija board. I mean, did you get any strange birds, or were they all nice and fine?
Well, luckily, the kind of movie I made doesn't lend itself to that type of, you know, fan. Thank you, God. You know, yeah, there are some strange people, but it's not that they're strange. It's just they're unique and different, and I've never had a bad experience. And I've got a great manager, Jim Cirinella, and every time I've gone, most of the time he's there with me, or else he has his associate, Tim Bean, and they just, I feel very protected, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah,
that's
I don't
really
feel
nice.
Like I'm out there all by myself. It's like they're right there, and they can handle anything. But honestly, the fans have been really, really terrific, you know. I mean, some you know, there's all different kinds of people, and but I've never, no one has ever been inappropriate or rude or, you know, sick or anything like that. They've all been great.
I noticed on your IMDb you were on My Three Sons. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
Love
That's
that
when
show.
That's I was Leslie Michaels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that show.
Yeah.
People that have seen your pictures have said you look like Naomi Watts. Do you know that actress?
Oh, my. Thank you. No. Yes, I know who she is.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe it's the blonde hair. Yeah. I got to meet David Lynch, the director, in one of his films, Mulholland Drive. She was in it, and she had that same type of hair that you had back on the on the film.
Yeah.
But speaking of actresses and acting, do you act today? Are you still open to roles today?
Well, I have not acted. Let's put it that way. No, not really. But sure, I would be open. I can't imagine it happen. No, I shouldn't say that. I would be thrilled if it happened. That's about all I can really say. Yeah, I'm open to it, definitely. Definitely.
Interesting. And you're in the Virginia area. We have people that listen all over, so that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, you know?
Who knows?
Gloria Stewart, that was up for an Oscar in Titanic, that starts narrating the film, she took all these years off from acting. She, like you, was a young, pretty starlet starting out at a young age.
She was phenomenal in that movie.
Yeah, and you were, I think, 17. But then she took off, I don't know how many years, to get married, raise kids to adulthood. And she got back into it, I think, in her 60s or something. And I think it's really cool when God does those full circle things, and then she ends up for an Oscar as Rose looking back on the Titanic.
Yeah, I really liked that a lot. I thought that was pretty amazing. You know, I don't say no to anything. I'm open to the right thing. If it comes along, I am open to it. I'm not out pursuing it, because quite frankly, I don't even know how to pursue it right now. So I'm just, you know, leaving the door open, and if something happens, fantastic. And if nothing happens, you know.
If it be his will, it'll come to you like a present from him, right?
I know, all wrapped up in a pretty bow.
So those of you that want to, you know, keep up with Linda and see Linda, facebook.com/KingKongEscapes. And I think there's a slash after escapes, but probably come up if you just put facebook.com King Kong Escapes or just search Linda Miller, King Kong Escapes. Well, we only got a few minutes left. If you were to act today, because I know all the filmmakers are listening out there that like the show, well, you know, I might be putting you on the spot, but do you know what kind of role you'd like to do?
Oh, yeah, you are putting me on the spot. No, I have not thought that through. No. I don't know. I have no idea. I should have been prepared for that answer, and I just wasn't.
Well, I hate to put people on the spot, but, you know, I think of things in the moment. I just kind of fly by the seat of my pants sometimes, and it just hit me as we're closing. I wonder what you would enjoy. But you know what? I think, who knows? I think it might come back to you. You know, there's those – it just seems like that T.S. Eliot poem where it says, sometimes our journey takes us back to where we started, and we know it as if for the first time, or – you know, the gifts of callings of God are irrevocable, or they're like still in us, you know, and we come back to them sometimes. But I don't know. I'm not God. I don't know if it's his will, but I think it would be really cool. But we'll see what happens. I think the best is yet to come, and you're living in that, you know, that Jeremiah thing, the plans that are a good future to give you a hope and all that stuff, huh?
Yes. That's the way it feels, let me tell you.
Well, we are so grateful to have you come on. I mean, it's like a treasure, you know. Those of us that wonder what happened to you to rediscover you, it's like we found a treasure we were looking for, like biblical story about looking for the pearl, great price, and you look all over and you finally find it's still there. Because, I mean, a lot of us, you know, just love you in this film and wonder what happened to you. So I guess it was the gentleman you referred to, was it Brett?
Yes,
Brett. Is that
Brett.
Name to the man that found you the first time?
Yes, he's the one who found me the first time.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, he gets our Columbo Award as a great detective to do that. And now, thanks to him and other writers, you're much easier to find for the rest of us. And now that there's a Facebook site, you know, fans can even keep in touch with you and everything.
Well, I have to tell you, I have enjoyed this as much as you have, and I'm really honored that you wanted to even talk to me. So thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I really, really enjoyed it. I feel it's went by so quick.
I know.
Einstein says time is relative when you have a great connection and you're enjoying the conversation. He said an hour seems like a minute, but he said when the person's boring, a minute seems like an hour. And that was how he proved relativity to the layman that wasn't real scientific. But it feels like
truth,
this 45 minutes just whizzed by.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Well,
we're going to keep in touch with you and keep up with you at facebook.com/KingKongEscapes and keep praying for you. And
thank you. Thank
you know,
you very
who
much.
Knows? I hope to see you in a movie one of these days. Maybe it'll be one I'm working on. Maybe it'll be one of our listeners that's a filmmaker. Who knows? But that
who
would
knows?
Be so cool. To
all
have
right, from
Linda
your lips
Miller.
To God's ears.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you've made it from... I'm glad you've made it from being the girl in King Kong's hands to the girl in God's hands. That's wonderful.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and blessings to you in Virginia, and enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your evening there.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot again.
Okay. Bye, Linda. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Man, did that go quick. Thanks for tuning in. What a wonderful story of faith. She really encouraged me with her faith story and her quoting of the scriptures. Wow. Well, King Kong said he wants the final word since he introduced Linda to us. So thanks for tuning in. And here is King Kong.